Welcome to the Sweep Podcast with me, Mitch Hollis, and him, Michael Holt.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, yeah. Couple of pretty eventful weeks have gone by in footballing terms, haven't they?
Loads of games since we last spoke. England, brilliant, won their second game, qualifying campaign, as well as moving up to fourth in the world, and Harry Kane and Gareth Southgate receiving MBEs and OBEs respectively. That's just international football.
And we've got a thrilling title race.
We have.
A couple of relegations and battles for the Champions League, Premier League places hotting up, not to mention your favourite division, the Championship.
I bloody love the Championship more than ever at the moment, and I reckon we should go to Portugal as well.
And I think we're also going to touch on fantasy football,
yes,
which Mitch will no doubt look forward to. But it is his week in the quiz, so maybe that'll bring him down a peg
or two. Piss poor, no doubt. But let's get on to the biggest story of the season, the title race in the Premier League. Manchester City went top on Saturday following the early kickoff, beating Fulham at Craven Cottage 2-0. Then on Sunday, Liverpool went back to the top of the league with a huge 2-1 victory over Spurs at Anfield, thanks to a massive error at the death. And then we finished the week with Manchester City going top again with another 2-0 win, this time at home to Cardiff. And that was their game in hand. So 1 point in it, both played the same amount of games, 6 games left for each, both in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. It's exciting, isn't it?
It is. It's massively exciting. And it's what we've wanted for the last couple of seasons, isn't it? It's two teams going head-to-head, winning pretty much every game that you'd expect them to win. And at some point, something's going to have to give. I don't necessarily think that both teams are going to win the next 6 games.
I think that's
pretty unlikely. But what it does give us is something to look forward to every time either one of them plays, and generally they don't play at the same time, which means that there's at least 2 90-minute worth of football matches every weekend or midweek that you look forward to seeing what the outcome of is going to be.
I think last season was a strange one because whilst it was a one-horse race, there was still something for Manchester City to play for, given the points and the goals, etc., that they were looking to get. And I think, you know, this season has proved actually how exciting it really is to have a title race. And, you know, realistically, with the exception of these two teams, there's 4 teams behind them that could, well, I mean, Spurs were, but they could all be in and amongst it any other season as well. So I think, you know, we've certainly got a lot of competition for place in the Premier League all the way through the 20 sides. But certainly at the top of the league now, more so than we possibly ever have done, we've got probably the most competitive league. And, I mean, you only have to look at the success that we've got in Europe at the moment with those teams as well. There's definitely a gulf in class.
Yeah, and that's the thing that you've kind of come to expect with English football of late. You mentioned it right at the top of the show with the international team. And not only that, but the way that those English players are playing for the top sides in England now as well. You look at the plethora of talent that Manchester City have got. They've got some great English players there. And Liverpool as well have obviously got a couple. But you can look at that side now and look at how much they've come on over the past 12 months. And I think their points total now is about 79 points, yep, which in previous seasons would have seen you well clear of pretty much every other team. So the fact that we've got 2 teams doing it and going toe-to-toe shows, like you said, the strength that the Premier League has at the moment.
Well, we'll have a look at the games. I mean, Manchester City, they look very comfortable in both. And, you know, on other days, they probably would have won them 4 or 5-0, you suspect. I wonder whether they're... I mean, you saw against Cardiff last night, they were very much going for it. They had a lot of shots on goal. They had plenty of the ball. And I still think that was probably with another gear or two to go as well. And you wonder if they've got into a stride now where they just feel very comfortable going out on the football pitch, particularly against the lower sides, where actually they don't have to strain too much given the amount of games they've got left. And I wonder if they really are managing the season well.
I think you look at the side that Guardiola put out last night, and with greatest respect to the majority of the players in there, they could be seen as a bit of a reserve team.
Yeah, I mean, he rotates well though, doesn't he? It's all about rotation, having that quality to be able to do that.
Yeah, but... And that's the thing, you look at the front three from last night, Mahrez, Sane and Jesus, and they've been on the bench for the majority of the season, and yet they still seem to have chipped in a hell of a lot where it's mattered. And that's the strength and depth piece that we talked about right at the start of August, where we were kind of previewing what the Premier League was going to look like. And I suppose that still is the difference, and although it's a minute difference, 1 point at this stage is nothing. You would back them to have more squad strength than Liverpool will between now and the end of the season. However, the consistency piece for Liverpool and not really having too many injuries across the season has probably seen them be the one side in the country who could have actually mounted this sort of challenge given the squad that they've got.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think, you know, they have been fortunate with injuries in the main. I think certainly if you look at their key players, more or less, you'd say the two fullbacks from the front three are probably the most important. And they've gone through most of the season with all five of those intact. And I think that's crucial. Van Dijk as well is arguably the most important player in the Premier League, to be honest. And, it showed when they missed him for a few games. And I think, they would struggle if they lost one, two, maybe even three of those on a for a few weeks, whereas Manchester City can replace every player on the pitch. And we talk about Fernandinho being the most important player for them. Yes, they did look a little bit ropey without him, but they'd still dust these sides off kind of 3-0 or 4-0 at most of the weeks. And, you look at Phil Foden with his first start last night as well. They've even got almost a third choice coming through and really impressing. And I think that's the biggest difference as well. And, we have to look at Liverpool and the game that they played this weekend. They were fantastic for large parts of the game against Spurs. We have to say that. But I think on the other side of that, we have to talk about the fact they let Spurs back into it. And, had Sissoko had anyone else's shooting boots on, they may have took all 3 points off them. And that, I would have said that probably would have been it had they gone 4 points behind at this stage now.
Yeah, I don't think that you're going to make up that much ground on Manchester City with 6 games to go. And yes, Liverpool's fixtures are more favourable than Manchester City's. I think City have still got Tottenham and Manchester United to play in the league, whereas Liverpool have only really got Chelsea to play. And that obviously could be the difference. But you would back City to be able to get over the line with a 4 point lead, certainly. Yeah. And I think the way it sits at the moment, there's probably still at least one twist or turn to go. I don't think that, like I said earlier, I don't think they will replicate one another's results between now and the end of the season. And it's just going to be who blinks first. And I wonder how crucial those 3 games in a row against Tottenham will be for Manchester City.
Oh, it's going to be absolutely massive. Spurs, to a certain extent, have no pressure on them. They do, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. But out of the 3 of those games, they're the ones that are not expected to go and win them as such. So they can just afford to go for it. And, I think Manchester City will still be challenging. They're likely to be an FA Cup final at some point. They will obviously be challenging for the league title as well. And I think, the pressure will be very much on them. And I think we saw Spurs arguably for 20 minutes probably play the best football they've played all season on Sunday. And had it not been for a little bit of luck, Liverpool wouldn't have won that game. But I think the luck is the crucial element. You could say that Liverpool are scraping these wins, they are getting the luck, and it's whether they continue with that or whether they run out of luck, because they're not playing fantastic football 90 minutes every single week. And I'm really intrigued to see what happens with them, because they probably will get back into their stride. The front three will start clicking for the last few games potentially. Equally, they could just be scraping away every single game. I genuinely think, we can talk about this afterwards, but I think Southampton will pose a challenge for them on Friday night.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is that they will see it as a no-lose, really. Everyone expects Liverpool to go there and win the game, and you look at the difference in quality on paper as well. Liverpool have got a much better squad. The thing with Liverpool is, mentality-wise, they've showed that they can cope with the pressure, and I only really refer to recent weeks when I talk about that, because obviously I think they had nearly a 10-point lead at one point, and obviously that's now evaporated. However, they haven't then dropped right off, and we saw Tottenham do that massively. They were within 3 points of both of these teams, and now they are miles behind. So it just shows what can happen in a couple of weeks. But Liverpool have held on until this point, and I think it will go quite far towards the end of the season. I think that they've got a lot about them towards the end of games. You see the home result against Everton, where they got the last minute winner through Origi. You see the game on Sunday where, yes, it was an own goal, but they were the ones who were putting the pressure on in the last couple of minutes, because they knew that they couldn't afford to drop any points. And let's have a quick look at the fixtures. Liverpool have got, like you said, Southampton away tomorrow night, then Chelsea at home. They've then got Cardiff away, Huddersfield at home, Newcastle away, and Wolves at home. Now, you would expect them to easily beat Cardiff, Huddersfield and Newcastle, with the greatest of respects to those sides. You would probably see them beating Southampton relatively comfortably on Friday. And then Chelsea and Wolves are probably the two that their fans would be slightly concerned about. However, if Wolves have got an FA Cup final to look forward to, which is realistic,
yep,
then they may rest quite a few players the last day of the season.
I don't know. I look at their fixtures, and as I say, I can see Southampton getting something. Chelsea at home, I would expect Liverpool to beat them at Anfield. But, you know, Chelsea, depending on which one turns up, could turn them over with relative ease. Cardiff away could still be scrapping for it as well. You know, Neil Warnock's not going to make it easy for them. Huddersfield at home, yes, you should be winning that. Newcastle away, I mean, Rafa Benitez will happily let them win, I would have thought, but it's not an easy place to go. And we've seen Newcastle in recent years, towards the end of the season, pick up a little bit of form, particularly at home as well. So that's probably not a favourable one. And as you say, Wolves at home, last game of the season, if it goes down to who wins on the last day of the season, Wolves at home or Brighton away for Manchester City, really you would expect Wolves at Anfield to be causing more problems than Brighton at the Amex.
Yeah, possibly. So we've looked at Liverpool's, let's quickly look at City's. They've got Palace away, then Spurs at home, then United away. And I think these three games for me will be the ones that matter in terms of them retaining the title or not. I think that they've struggled at Palace over the last couple of years. I think Palace had the opportunity to end that unbeaten run last season where Milivojevic missed a last-minute penalty. And we saw what happened at the Etihad earlier this season when Andros Townsend scored that screamer. So they will see Palace as a bit of a bogey team. And psychologically, you wonder what that might do to them. They've then got Tottenham at home, which is the sandwich of the of the two Champions League games. And then they've got Manchester United away, which will obviously come off the back of the second Champions League leg. So I think that it will probably come down to the next four games. I think if Manchester City are able to beat Palace and Tottenham, then they go into that United clash knowing that it's obviously still in their hands. But not only that, after that, they've got Burnley away, which, regardless of the fact that Burnley and Brighton will both be scrapping for relegation, Manchester City will win both of those games.
Yep,
Leicester at home, you would imagine, would probably suit City as well because they play decent enough football. They do try and attack. It's unlikely that Brendan Rodgers is just going to make them sit in. However, if it's still neck and neck at that point, who's to stop him going there in the same mindset that Benitez goes against Liverpool?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Well, actually, I want to derail Manchester City's title bid. So all we know is that there's a point in it, and the next sort of 6-7 weeks are going to be absolutely massive, week in, week out.
Yes, it is very exciting. But we've mentioned Spurs a few times there. We need to talk about them now. The defeat at Anfield finished off a run of five games where they picked up just 1 point, which is mad. You know, we've said before that they were challenging for the league title only a few weeks ago. So for them to have drifted off as they have into, you know, relative obscurity in terms of the title race and possibly even into the Europa League abyss, it's a big shame. However, a big, big last 24 hours, which has seen them finally move into their new stadium, where they beat Crystal Palace 2-0 to move up to third. And today, they've announced a world record post-tax profit of $113 million.
And these are the kind of boosts that would probably do Tottenham quite well between now and the end of the season. The squad isn't a big squad there. There's a lot of pressure on quite a small amount of players, and you could argue that that's probably got to them and Pochettino in recent weeks. Like you said, I think they actually performed quite well against Liverpool, but not consistently over 90 minutes on Sunday. And that's what's let them down this season, is that level of inconsistency. And you just wonder where they could have been. And had they been able to not only hold on to the coattails of the top two, but be on sort of similar points to them at this stage, then you would argue that the league would be in their hands. And I just wonder whether that move to the stadium has come sort of 6 weeks too late, because we've seen teams try and play in new stadiums in the past and struggle to adapt to it. But you would imagine that given how long it's been coming, the fact that the dimensions of the pitch are exactly as they were at White Hart Lane, and it's not exactly miles away from the original ground, that they could go in there and steamroller the next sort of five or six teams that they play.
They could. I think, you know, overall they will be obviously looking at the Champions League. They need to qualify for that. And you know, Pochettino's putting pressure on them too, and he's saying now they've got everything right off the pitch, they now need to start winning trophies. And I think this season, whatever happens, it will be encouraging. I think if they don't finish in Champions League places, it'll be disappointing, but there will still be an encouragement in the sense that they were so close. You know, they know that if they can certainly keep everyone together, they've got the new stadium now, they've got that little bit of momentum probably at the end of the season that they've been hoping for. There's still some encouragement that actually going into next season, they know they need to sign kind of three or four very good players, try not to lose any players, but it's a really good stepping stone. And they've gradually built, and it's been quite slow over the last few years, but they've gradually built, and I think until they decline, it's difficult to say that there's any real issues there.
No, and I suppose the next step for them is to sustain that title challenge. Getting in the Champions League this season is an absolute minimum. To miss out on that would be horrendous, despite the fact that they've made all this money this season. That's because they didn't sign anyone.
Yeah.
Two transfer windows running. So you can kind of understand why that's happened, given the amount that teams around them have spent. The difficulty that Tottenham will have now is trying to get up to the next level. And you would argue that they've been up there with the best of the rest over the past three seasons, really, since Pochettino's gone in there. But they have to sustain a title challenge. They've got to do what Liverpool have done this season, and that's a marked improvement on the season before. And to do that, a lot of factors have to turn, and I'm just not sure that enough of them can do in a one summer period. The most important thing from their point of view is the fact that Pochettino looks like he's staying now.
Is that pure chance, though?
I don't know whether he would have gone to Manchester United. I think that you see how he talks up the new stadium and what's happening off the pitch there and how much he loves the club. I wonder whether he would have actually just stayed at Tottenham. I think that Manchester United have shown that they are able to compete with the teams at the top, but they're still not where they would want to be. And all the money in the world might not be able to change that side, given how much they've spent already. He's been at Tottenham for a while now. He's got this project, and I think it's probably more likely to be a Real Madrid or maybe a Bayern Munich or someone like that. Possibly Paris Saint-Germain, obviously, he used to play for them. I think it may be one of those sides rather than another Premier League side that eventually manages to take him away from Tottenham.
Well, we'll see what happens for the rest of the season for Spurs. I mean, they've got a bit of a lift now, and they've got the potential to comfortably finish in the top four. They've obviously got the fixtures against Manchester City, but I think overall they'll be expecting to win most of the games, and I think they do generally come good towards the end of the season. And, you know, we've seen Harry Kane over the last few years score bagfuls in the last kind of five or six games as well, so I'd like to see it happen, and I'd like to see it, you know, for them to have a really good encouraging end to the season with the new stadium, rather than just kind of glossing over a reality of them dropping out. And, you know, they've been great value all season, and they've made the title race interesting, and it'd be a shame for them to kind of peter out into fifth or sixth.
It would indeed, but there's one set of fans who would not think that, and they don't live too far away in North London, and they're Arsenal fans. And Arsenal currently sit fourth in the Premier League, and they've kind of crept somewhat under the radar in this competition for the Champions League places. They obviously beat Newcastle at the Emirates on Monday night, and they've looked pretty comfortable in the last couple of games, yeah, really, haven't they? I think Aaron Ramsey scored again, and it's so frustrating to see that he's going to end up at Juventus at the end of the season, because what a player on his day. And I think Emery's kind of shown us that if you can give him consistent starts and game time in the Premier League, then he'll repay you with the sort of form that we've seen in patches over the last sort of 6 or 7 years.
Absolutely. I think importantly for Arsenal, they've shored it up a bit more at the back now, and ultimately, whatever happens this season, they have made huge strides under Emery. They've already got as many points as they finished on last season with Wenger, and they've got six games left. So it's huge encouragement. They're currently in the top four. You know, they're a place better off than they were last year in terms of finishing in the Champions League rather than the Europa League places. So from that perspective, that's absolutely huge for them. And it's now really, it's theirs to lose. And I think, you know, if they do get the Champions League, that would have ultimately been their goal at the start of the season. So they can look to build and potentially spend a little bit of money as well. There are clear areas of that squad that do need improvement. And, you know, we talk about Aaron Ramsey as being almost a standout performer. He's going to go. He needs to be replaced. And, you know, Mesut Ozil is kind of getting back up to speed a little bit now as well. So it's just keeping that consistency going. But there are still some gaps in there. There still does need to be a little bit more solidness at the back to a certain extent as well. I think the keeper situation has almost sorted itself out over the season. Obviously, the two strikers are, you know, as good as most in the Premier League as well, particularly together. And it's maybe just they need a few players to adapt into different systems so the two of those can thrive a little bit more as well.
And just on that point, I think Emery's actually handled them both really well, because you would have thought that when Lacazette realised that Aubameyang was coming into Arsenal, he may well have feared for his place and whether those two could coexist at the club together. And the run in the Europa League's obviously helped, because playing games Thursday, Sunday has allowed each member of that sort of partnership to be able to start games consistently. But like you say, when they've played together, they seem to thrive. And I'm not convinced that they could do a whole season like that, because defensively you really do lose an element of protection. I think at home it's not a bad tactic to go with, but away from home you'd probably be up against it, because you're essentially defending with nine men. Yeah. But Arsenal have made progress this season, and I think that Emery deserves huge credit for that, because we all talked about how difficult it was going to be after what happened with Wenger, and you've seen that Manchester United are still recovering from Alex Ferguson leaving. So if they're able to make progress this season, and you never know what could happen in the Europa League, they could realistically
they could
beat Napoli, and if they do, then you'd give them a pretty good chance of winning it. And they've got somebody in charge with Unai Emery who's got such a plethora of experience in that competition, not just in it, but winning it. The amount of times that he got to the final with Sevilla, you would have thought he'd have the experience required to prepare them well enough mentally for that tie.
I agree. Just a quick word on the game. Newcastle offered very little, going long to Rondon so often, getting virtually nowhere, and you know they're still 7 points clear of the relegation zone. I'd say another win, a couple of draws should be enough, right?
Yeah, Newcastle won't go down. There's absolutely no chance. Their home form has saved them, and I think they've got favourable fixtures between now and the end of the season that will get them through it.
Let's keep for the battle for the Champions League, though. Chelsea moved up to fifth, 2 wins in the last week. Beat Cardiff 2-1 away on Sunday. More on that in a second. Cruised to victory against Brighton on Wednesday night as well. But Sunday, is it fair to say they got a little bit lucky?
Yeah, they did. I don't think they deserved anything from this game, really. I think Cardiff were the far superior side for probably 85 minutes. And I think it was Craig Pawson who was in charge. And he had a very bad game, but probably not as bad as those Chelsea players. They just looked completely off the pace, and the fans weren't happy with the team selection. And I just wonder, I think that obviously the win paper's over the cracks, and they got another comfortable win last night in a game that you would expect them to win every day of the week. But Chelsea don't seem to have progressed, and it's kind of the opposite to Arsenal, really. We thought that Sarri at the start of the season was going to be the one to take them to the next level. The way that his Napoli side played last season and the season before, they played some of the best football in Europe, and it just hasn't happened for him at Chelsea. And I personally don't think he'll be there at the start of next season. I think they've probably identified who they want to take them forward, and there will be a big restructure there in the summer, and I believe that Eden Hazard will probably be at the forefront of that.
Yeah, I agree in terms of Hazard leaving and Sarri not being there as well. I think what is interesting, though, is that, you know, last night we have to look at the key players. Giroud started for the first time and he scored. First time in the league this year, sorry, and he scored. Loftus-Cheek started and scored an absolute stunner, 25 yards out. And of course, Callum Hudson-Odoi started his first Premier League game of the season after impressing for England. But within that, it showed that there is some depth to the squad, there is some quality, and those players that don't normally get a look in are generally victims of tactics and the way that he wants to play. And I think it got to the point last night where he almost just let them go and do what they want. You know, he picked a side and said, right, in that case, then go and impress me. And those players were impressive. And I just think it's going to be a very interesting one. They can't sign anyone. Hazard's likely to leave. They've clearly got a lot of quality in the squad. They've got a lot of players out on loan, as we know. And I think it's going to be a really intriguing summer for them, because whether they get in the Champions League or not, it doesn't help them attract any players, because it's completely irrelevant with the transfer ban. So ultimately, they're probably better off not qualifying for the Champions League in the long run, because it's not going to do anything reputationally. I don't think they will necessarily have the quality in the squad, particularly if Hazard does leave, to impress in that competition next season, whereas I think Europa League would be a realistic opportunity to win a trophy, as it is this season. You know, they may surprise us and still go and do that.
I think they've got a much easier game than Arsenal have, and if Sarri can't get them through a tie against the second best team in Prague, then I'm not convinced that he'll have the opportunity to even finish the season off. I think that would be massive for Chelsea fans. If they're knocked out of that competition, then that could be curtains for him.
Yeah, it could, you're right. And let's talk about another manager or another side that have got a new manager as such, and that's Manchester United. It's been a mixed week for them. Obviously, they've announced Solskjaer as the manager full-time now. They gave him a 3-year contract, and they beat Watford at Old Trafford on Saturday. But I'd say it was a laboured performance. On another day, they get nothing from it, which happened to be the case at Molineux on Tuesday, where they lost after taking the lead. You know, they looked fantastic for the first 20 minutes as well, and after that, Wolves just took them apart, really.
Yeah, and I think we need to address the elephant in the room straight away. Have they announced Solskjaer too early?
It's an odd decision for me. It's they didn't need to do it. You know, there was no pressure. Even if they knew they were going to keep Solskjaer there all season, for the rest of the season, sorry, I think everyone knew that anyway. And I think the difficulty is that it's almost taken the shine off the players, in the sense that they could go out and impress him, and it was a bit of a distraction from any bad performances. It was like, is Solskjaer going to come in? And just, it was something else to talk about. Whereas now, the pressure's back on the players, back on the results. And I think we've seen that over the last two games, that they've looked poor. And I know they've struggled with injuries, and you know, they could do with some new faces. But I think there needed to be some good feeling over the summer. And if they struggle to get in the Champions League, they finish sixth as they're in now, they haven't really got anything to look forward to. Solskjaer's already been announced, and, you know, do they attract the same calibre of player if they're not in the Champions League?
I think they'll spend money regardless, and I don't think that he will have, well, had the agreement to sign a contract if that wasn't going to be the case. You look at how far away they are from those top three sides, if you include Tottenham in that bracket, and that's with an ageing playing squad. You've got the likes of Juan Mata and Ander Herrera, and I think Matic isn't getting any younger. They really need to strengthen in central midfield. We've seen Pogba have pretty good half a season. Yeah. He's not been consistently brilliant, and I think that he is one of the top players in the Premier League on his day, but I think they need somebody to sit in there and really sort of lead that side, somebody who can take up the reins from the players that we've just mentioned. And I don't think that Manchester United will have that in these players like McTominay, who he keeps playing. Fred has been on the fringes, but has actually come back into the team in recent weeks. And they could cut a few losses and go for somebody quite big who could come in and make a big difference. But if they don't back Solskjaer, then there was no point in giving them the job.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've just said about Chelsea, I don't think it would be a huge loss if they didn't get the Champions League. I think it would be huge for Manchester United if they didn't finish in the Champions League places. You know, they're expected to be beaten by Barcelona, so that would only give them the league to focus on. And they can't afford to be struggling to beat what are effectively mid-table sides. You know, they have some favourable fixtures between now and the end of the season, but, you know, they've got a game against Chelsea, and obviously that game against Manchester City could prove to be pivotal for them.
Absolutely right, but that's it for the top six of the Premier League. After this break, join us for more top six chat, but this time in the Championship. Woohoo!
It promises to be another special Champions League evening, and here to enjoy it all with us are Rio Ferdinand, Steven Gerrard and Ian Wright. All three have had their hands on this trophy, Rio and Steven in Moscow and Istanbul respectively. And Ian, when he walked into the studio this evening... I've been looking forward to that all day.
You should have said when I walked into the studio and grabbed the back of your head.
great.
Welcome back to part two of the Sweep podcast, and we are going to the Championship, the league that everybody loves. And what a bloody weekend it's been as well. It's so exciting. The weekend started with a cracker in the Midlands, with West Brom beating Birmingham City 3-2 at the Hawthorns. That means the Baggies have won three on the bounce since parting ways with Darren Moore, which we kind of slated, but it's been all right, hasn't it, really?
They won't go up. I'll still slate it. It was still the wrong decision they should have held on to.
We shall see. But a bigger story in the Midlands is the demise of Birmingham City. And I do say that with a tint of sadness in my voice for a change. It was only a few weeks ago they were challenging for the playoffs, lost to Villa. Possibly the bigger factor, though, was having 9 points deducted for breaching EFL profitability and sustainability rules.
You are one of the worst liars I've ever met.
No, you don't want to see any football club in that situation. I love the fact that we beat them, and I would love to see them. If we go up, I'd love to see them go down. I like playing them. It's something to look forward to every year.
Because you win.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if they were relegated in these circumstances, it would be a huge shame. If they were relegated because they were purely just shit, then it would be funnier. But you don't, you know, you just, you, you don't want to see anything like this. You don't want to see a club being run so bad, or a club that takes on Harry Redknapp for a short period of time and ends up in this situation, which we've seen previous times before. And, you know, they're battling relegation. They are 5 points clear of the drop, but, you know, whilst I say they're not shit, they are the worst side in the league at the moment. They're the most out of form side in the league, and you wonder what matters off the field are affecting them on the field, because the mindset of a player to be kind of challenging for potential promotion to then just be, you know, flipped on its head to challenge to stay up must be, I don't know, how would you cope with that? It must be really bizarre.
I reckon I'd cope and by checking my bank balance every day. I don't think that many of those players are emotionally connected to the club in a way that it's going to affect them too much. I just think they're relatively unprofessional if they go down at this stage, because if you've been challenging for the top six all season and then you actually nearly go down with a 5-point buffer, then you deserve to be in League One.
We shall see. Anyway, up to the top of the league, Norwich are 5 points clear of second place. They look on course to go to the promised land, I would say. It's following a 1-0 win at Middlesbrough, who have dropped like a stone in recent weeks. Their form's just as bad as Birmingham's, really. They've lost five on the bounce, and consequently, they've dropped out of the playoffs. And I wonder, is Tony Pulis going to find himself out of the job?
I wouldn't have thought so at this stage of the season. Steve Gibson's not the sort of manager who will pull the trigger mid-season if there's still something to play for, and you never know. Look at where Villa were a few weeks back, and Sheffield Wednesday, and all it takes is two wins, and you could be back up there. So I think he'll probably go... Well, I think he'll probably stay until the summer, but it may well be a little bit like Chelsea, that they have a bit of a rejig at that point.
I think to be in the playoffs all season, as Middlesbrough have been, and you know, consistently up there for the last couple of years, it's a huge drop-off for them to be in such bad form and not finish in the playoffs. So, yeah, it may well be a change of direction for Middlesbrough. We shall see. Leeds United came from 2-1 down to beat Millwall 3-2. Late on at Elland Road on Saturday to move up to second as a result of another game that finished 3-2 elsewhere in Yorkshire, and that was because Bristol City also came from 2-1 down to beat Sheffield United thanks to an Andreas Weimann hat-trick. Drink it in, Michael. That's his first ever career hat-trick.
We saw him a few times for Villa, and he was not very good.
He was dog pops.
Yeah,
he?
He's been all right since he left, hasn't he? I know he had limited impact at Derby, but he's maybe finally found his home.
But we mentioned Borough there. Bristol City beat them in the week, 1-0. And it's lifted Bristol City back into the playoffs as well. And that's just above Villa, who take up the last spot following a 2-1 win over Blackburn Rovers on Saturday. And most informed side in the league, Villa. And the dream is very much still alive, Michael.
Are you going up?
We are. I suspect we will finish in the playoffs now. And I still fancy us to beat any team in the playoffs as well. I would rather Leeds were there than Sheffield United, personally. I think Leeds might crumble when it comes to that. Sheffield United, I think, have got some sort of grit and determination to get them through it. I would quite like to play West Brom over two legs. I still look back at the J. Rodriguez handball over December as a kind of turning point for our season. It kind of went downhill very quickly after that.
Well, fingers crossed.
Indeed. And still between 5th and 12th, there's only 7 points separating all the teams there. Derby kept their playoff hopes alive with the biggest win of the weekend. 6-1 win over Rotherham at the weekend. And it may be some time for them to go and get some confidence and go on a run as well. But, you know, as I say, with realistically 7 sides still going for it with 7 points between them, it's anyone to get those last two places. And down at the bottom as well, it's tight. We've touched on Birmingham's demise and off the pitch issues at Bolton as well. Their players have been striking, not getting paid, question marks as to whether the fans can attend the next couple of games for safety reasons. But they gave themselves a fighting chance of survival this weekend, beating QPR in Steve McLaren's final game before he was relieved of his duties. And it's a shame for Steve McLaren. He kind of looked like he was getting it back on track, didn't he? And then now he's out the job. And you wonder, does he have to go back abroad now? Is his reputation almost gone completely in this country?
I honestly don't know. He's always been a bit of a streaky manager, hasn't he? Where he'll do okay at a club and then he'll do really badly for a while and then he'll turn it round for a bit. And it just seems to be the cyclical nature of his management style. I wonder whether he'll go back for a third spell at FC 20 and bring back the glory years. But I just don't know. It's a pretty large fall from grace, losing the job at QPR, having been a previous England manager, but he's a trier, and God loves a trier.
He is a trier, and, you know, we talk about Bolton, they are triers. It's an uphill battle for the Trotters, but you would expect them to go down, really, with Ipswich, and the final spot is going to be battled to the death between Rotherham, Millwall, Wigan and Reading, just separated by 4 points, and obviously Birmingham just above. What a bloody league, eh?
It's absolutely crazy. I think the craziest thing about the Championship this season is the fact that Ipswich haven't gone down yet. The fact that there's been two teams relegated from the Premier League. Ipswich seem to have had 0 points on the board for a while now. I don't know where these 24 points came from that they've got, but I think they'll probably go down pretty soon.
They've actually been all right under Paul Lambert. They've drawn a lot of games. They haven't really managed to win games, but yeah, I think you're right. You know, I'm not sure mathematically what it is, but they are going down very soon.
Talking of more positive sides, it's time to take a trip to Portugal. Now, Sporting Lisbon have played twice since we last spoke. They had a comfortable away win at Chaves on Saturday at 3-1. And then the big one last night. They were playing Benfica at home in the second leg of the Taça de Portugal. They were trailing 2-1 from the first leg. And it was 0-0 up until the 75th minute when a goal from future Premier Leaguer Bruno Fernandes saw them took the lead on away goals. They managed to hold on for the last 15 minutes. Benfica had a man sent off in the 95th minute, and then that was it. They are through to the final. They will play... who are they playing in the final? They're playing Porto in the final on the 25th of May, which is obviously going to be a huge crunch game. And their next league game is at home to 9th place Rio Ave this Sunday. In other league news, they've finally moved up to 3rd. They've been in 4th pretty much since we've been covering them. They're finally up to 3rd. They've leapfrogged 4th place Braga on goal difference. They are currently 8 points behind runaway leaders Benfica and Porto, so it doesn't look like they're going to be challenging for the Champions League this season. However, a 3rd place finish and to win the Taça de Portugal would be seen as a relative success given the amount of departures they had in the summer.
Exactly. Lovely old job. Well, we're going to be back after this break where we're going to talk about the battle at the bottom of the Premier League.
2-1, lads!
He's spitting at 14-year-olds through a window. I mean, he's presenting on the TV. I mean, for Christ's sake, he's supposed to be one of the top men. You can't condone that whatsoever. It's filth. Absolute filth. Job centre.
Welcome back to the third part of this week's Sweeper podcast. And now we've been to the Championship and Portugal, it's time to get spicy at the bottom of the Premier League. We've lost two clubs, Mitch.
We have. Huddersfield at the weekend, Fulham in the week. And Huddersfield lost 2-0 at Crystal Palace, and well, the results went against them. I didn't think it would happen this weekend, but it did. But it really only delayed the inevitable, didn't it, if they would have stayed up. And Fulham, we've already spoke about them losing against Manchester City at the weekend, but it was the 4-1 defeat at the hands of Watford on Tuesday that sent them down. And again, an air of inevitability about it. But I think we have to look at what next for them both, because it's probably worth mentioning they are worlds apart in the kind of circumstances surrounding the two clubs.
Yeah, and Fulham obviously only really have themselves to blame. They came up from the Championship last season with the nucleus of a team that may well have been able to compete, but we'll never know because they decided to ship out all the players and bring in new ones. And that level of inconsistency at the start of the season just hampered them, and they never really got going. Huddersfield, on the other hand, didn't really spend any money, and although they've made signings since they've been in the Premier League, they've never been anywhere near as high profile as the players that Fulham brought in. And
what? Jason Puncheon?
Jason Puncheon, yeah. And Jason Puncheon above their weight they've been since they were back in the Premier League. And you just wonder for Huddersfield. I really hope that they're able to keep hold of Jan Sivert and he doesn't leave, because he seems like somebody who cares, and I think he probably took the impossible job there. Nobody was going to save them, and it's obviously shown, but he strikes me as somebody a little bit like Daniel Farke at Norwich, who had to acclimatise to English football in his first season. But look at the second season, not only are they top of the Championship and clear by 5 points, but they play a decent brand of football, and I think that could be massive for Huddersfield going down into the Championship. They'll obviously have more money than the majority of teams down there, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these two sides go next season, because again, you've got Fulham will have quite a few players who they've brought in who you would imagine won't stay there in the Championship, whereas Huddersfield will probably go down with the majority of that squad to compete again next season. So two very different seasons, not in terms of the amount of wins and points that they picked up, but in the manner of those defeats and the manner of those performances and the manner of the approach that both sides have had. And we all got on board the Huddersfield train last season, didn't we? We absolutely loved it. Yeah. And they're a great club, great set of fans, and I guess they've probably overachieved in the last 2 or 3 years, and they will all have enjoyed the Premier League experience, but for them it's just making sure that they're able to solidify in the top half of the Championship next season, really.
I mean, if we don't go up, I'll be looking forward to going there again. I think I'm still recovering from the last time I went there, to be honest. But Fulham as well, you know, we've been to Fulham this season, and it was great, and I think it's a huge shame. If you look at the amount of money they've thrown at it, and you look at it in comparison to Wolves, I suppose, is probably the easiest comparison, how much money they've spent and, you know, the types of players they've brought in. It's just gone completely the other way. And, you know, they played some incredible football last season, and I don't know whether that papered over some cracks for them. I'm not really sure what it was, or whether it was purely they brought in too many players, but I'm intrigued to see whether Scott Parker's going to be given a go to prove himself. I've not seen anywhere to prove otherwise, but I think given the nature of the board and what their ambitions are, I suspect they may be looking to get some more experience in and maybe work with what they've got, but get someone who's probably got a little bit more experience and is a bit more high profile to work with that as well.
I think that Fulham will do okay next season. I don't think they'll finish in the bottom half, but I just don't see them challenging at the moment. I think they've got a bit of a losing mentality, and I'm not really sure they've got any kind of squad balance. I think they need to get rid of a few and bring in a few, like you say, in the summer. And experienced Championship players will go a long way to strengthening that side. I think they'll lose Mitrovic. I think he's been a bright star in a very poor season, and it wouldn't surprise me to see one of the top six go for him as a reserve striker. I think that he's good enough. I think he's better than someone like Llorente at Tottenham, and I'm not saying that he would suit their style of play, but it just wouldn't surprise me to see him end up at a club who are looking for a cheaper option, but somebody who knows the division.
Crystal Palace is what I'm going to say.
You don't need Mitrovic there, you've got Benteke.
Crystal Palace is what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say Cardiff next, because they are the last relegation place taker. I'm not sure that's a sentence I've ever said before or anyone else has, but they lost to Chelsea at the weekend, lost to Manchester City last night. I'm not sure they necessarily would have been expected to win either game. We've already spoke about the Chelsea game. They were desperately unlucky. Obviously, results have gone against them as well, and they're 5 points behind now, and I wonder, is it too late now, or can they still battle their way out of it? Out of all the clubs that are in that position, would you say that they would almost relish the challenge?
Possibly. I think the big game for them is the game against Burnley, and I think if they lose that, they'll go down, because the gap at that stage between them and Burnley will be 8 points, and they'll still be 5 points behind Southampton and Brighton. So I think they have to win that. If they win that, then they've got Burnley firmly within their sights. They've also got Southampton and Brighton firmly within their sights as well. So it's not that a game comes down to one season very often, but I think in this respect it probably does, and Warnock will absolutely have his players up for that one. You know for a fact that they will try and get every single refereeing decision and put pressure on the officials, especially after what happened at the weekend. And I don't think Cardiff are out of it. I think to have 30 points or 28 points at this stage of the season for a side who everybody thought would finish bottom is a real achievement. And yes, they've lost two of their best players. However, they were better than Chelsea for 85 minutes on Sunday, and if you're able to do that against a top six side, then arguably you should be able to do it against the sides towards the bottom of the league.
Well, let's have a look at the fixtures, because you know, there could be worse. As you say, Burnley at Turf Moor, away at Brighton after that as well, Liverpool at home, you know, Fulham away as well, they host Palace at home, and finish up at Old Trafford. So that's those four games out of the six that they'll fancy themselves for, you'd have thought.
But I would imagine that they'd probably have to win at least three, if not four, games between now and the end of the season.
Which is what Warnock said. Warnock said three games, and, you know, it's probably a fair assessment. 9 points is huge at this stage of the season, and there definitely are three winnable games in there. If they beat Burnley, you'd fancy them to get something at Brighton, Fulham, and Palace at home as well. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they get on. What did you make of Warnock's reaction after the Chelsea game? The stare down?
It's not that I'd prefer to talk about. What I'd prefer to talk about is some of his comments in the media since then. He just shown why people dislike him, unfortunately. And talking about, I think he said something about how his wife wouldn't have blamed him if he'd have punched the referee and the linesman. It just gives off a really, really bad image of what referees and linesmen have to go through. And don't get me wrong, they would, had they been able to come out on Sunday and talk about the mistakes they made, they would have done, they would have held their hands up. And that's the difficulty being a match official. When you make a mistake, you're not allowed to come out and apologise. You're not allowed to come out and give your version of events. And the way that Neil Warnock criticises match officials is disgusting. The thing that sticks in my mind is the fact that they've had a couple of decisions go for them this season that really shouldn't have. You look at the Sol Bamba goal against Brighton, which was about 4 yards offside, and then he took his shirt off in the aftermath, didn't get the second yellow card. And Warnock came out after the game and said, well, you win some, you lose some, that's football. But then when the shoe's on the other foot, he can't
take
it.
You're not losing some and winning some, are you?
And that's the difficulty in any neutral really liking that Cardiff side and liking Neil Warnock. You look at ways to lose football matches, and there's a way to do it. And unfortunately, I think he's one of the most classless managers that has ever been in the Premier League, and that's probably why he has the reputation that he has. And I won't miss him in the Premier League if Cardiff do go down. I've got nothing against Cardiff. I wouldn't be adverse to them staying up as long as it's not at the hands of Southampton. However, I just don't think that he belongs in the Premier League. I think he's a Championship manager at best, and I'm surprised that he's still at the level he is.
He's got a lot on his plate with Brexit as well, let's face it. You know, he's got a lot to think about there.
Was he on the march, do you know?
I think he was probably heading it up. But yeah. Just one last thing on that game. Did you see Jamie Carragher with his virtual reality headset on being the linesman?
I did see that,
What on earth is that?
I mean, there's certain things that we need in football, and I'm not convinced that virtual reality is one of them at this stage. I think,
or if we do, at least learn how to use it properly first.
Yeah, absolutely.
One second. Yeah. I'll get it. Yeah. No, just come in.
It's fine, Jamie. I paid £35 a month just for the sports package on Sky. If you could try and do this in rehearsals, that'd be great. I think that it was obviously a mistake on the linesman's part. If William was in the way, he was in the way. But we don't need to be shown in that manner, do we? It's got us all talking, which is probably the thing that they wanted it to do. But
we've talked worse things about Jamie Carragher.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I think that people won't remember Cardiff going down if they do go down because of these bad decisions. It's because they've not been good enough across the season. And you never know. Between now and the end of the season, they could win those three games and quite comfortably stay up. However, I don't think that anyone could argue if they did go down.
Speaking of which, we've mentioned Burnley, and we've said, you know, that could effectively seal Cardiff's fate if Burnley was to win, and, you know, Burnley's survival certainly. And, you know, it was a huge win this weekend after a run of consecutive losses. They beat Wolves 2-0 at home, stretched 5 points clear of Cardiff. And I think for me, I want to kind of get your opinion on, if they stay up, what do they do next season? Because, you know, do they have to try and attract some fresh blood, or do they take the positive from the last two seasons and really just try and get some consistency in place? Because I think it's consistency that they've lacked more than anything this season, isn't it?
I think that Burnley know their limits. I think that they've got a squad of players who are good enough to stay in the Premier League, and I think most people have known that. The thing with Sean Dyche is he knows that he has to get that extra 20% out of them, because there are teams down there who spend a lot more than Burnley do, so straight away you're on the back foot. And obviously, expectation-wise, it was going to be very difficult after what happened last season. But I think that they'll be absolutely fine. I don't see them going down. You look at the home form and the fact that they've been one of the most informed sides in the bottom half of the table since Christmas. I've just got a feeling that they'll have enough. And the fact that they've got to play at Cardiff, if you're a side down there, that's one of the teams that you want to be playing at home. It would be Cardiff or Huddersfield or Fulham. You'd want those home games. And I just think that he's got enough about him in the top flight to get them over the line now. And it will be a very interesting summer for Burnley, because they can't really stagnate. They can't do the same thing again, because it will eventually run out and they will eventually go down. Yeah. And it's yet to be seen whether a team is able to continually bounce back as they did last time they went down to the Championship. But they play a brand of football that not many people enjoy watching, but it's effective. And we saw that against Wolves on Saturday, a team that I didn't expect them to beat. I thought the Wolves would probably go there and turn them over relatively easily, but they've made Turf Moor into a fortress of late, and fair play to them.
We've got to mention that level on points with Burnley and just five above the drop are Southampton and Brighton. But maybe crucially, they've both got a game in hand as well. Southampton, a superb win on Saturday, beating the aforementioned Brighton 1-0 at the Amex. And is that arguably the biggest result of the season, Southampton?
Oh, 100%, yeah, I think.
Especially with the other results as well.
That's the thing. You look at the fact that Burnley won, and that's been the the difficulty from a Southampton point of view in recent weeks, is the games that we've won, everyone around us seems to have won that week as well. So you would have hoped to have a little bit more security and a bit more of a gap between us and the other teams at the bottom, but it just hasn't materialised. So that's why beating one of your rivals is absolutely crucial.
And another goal, great performance from Pierre-Emile Højbjerg.
German Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. Yeah,
and then the boys behind him as well. You know, you've got Bednarek's come on this season. Yoshida has looked consistent. And Angus Gunn in goal as well. You know, there's been some very good performances of late from Southampton, or certainly in the second half of the season, under Hasenhüttl. And it's probably easy for you to look at it, but is there some optimism under him now? And is it just a case of getting this season out of the way and then there's a real opportunity to build on it?
It's a bit of both, really. I think that there have been green shoots of optimism from a lot of the fan base, and I think you'll see against Liverpool tomorrow night, we sold out for the first time in a long time, and even against the sides who are in the top four, we've struggled to sell out this season, and that's a mark of what the fans have seen on the pitch. But in recent times, we've beaten Tottenham, we gave Manchester United a really good game, and there's only really been two or three games since Hasenhüttl's come in where you've been disappointed with the result. Performances you can forgive. I think that's the thing. You go to Manchester United, you expect to lose, but the performance that we saw there was excellent. And I do have a level of optimism. However, I think it would be short-sighted not to make sure that we get over the line between now and the end of the season. We've got the most favourable fixtures out of the sides in the bottom six or seven. However, that doesn't mean anything unless you pick points up in those games. And we've talked about Cardiff. If they're to beat Burnley in the next game, then straight away you would imagine Southampton won't get anything tomorrow night against Liverpool. And if that's the case, then straight away we're only 2 points ahead of the team in 18th again, and the season swings the other way. So what we have to make sure is that we finish the season strongly. I would hope that in Hasenhüttl we'll be able to do that. And then if we are able to maintain our Premier League status this season, there may well be optimism next season, but I think at the moment all Southampton fans are guarded against what may well happen in the coming weeks, and you just never know in the Premier League. We saw it last season with Swansea. They seemed to be absolutely flying under Carvajal, and they got themselves out of the relegation zone and looked comfortable and were probably at times looking up the table, and then the last few weeks they just lost every game going and ended up being relegated quite comfortably. So I don't think anyone's looking at next season. However, if we are able to get over the line, I think most people would hope for a marked improvement on what we've seen over the last couple of years.
No doubt buzzing about some Friday night football.
I don't like Friday night football. We've talked about this before. However, I think the atmosphere at St Mary's tends to be better for evening games. It's not a great place to go and watch Saturday afternoon football. So hopefully the crowd will be up for it in this one. And you never know. I think the longer we can go keeping Liverpool away from scoring will be key to the result. I think if we concede early, we'll probably get beat 3-0 or 4-0, but if we're able to keep it relatively tight for the first half an hour, then nerves start to come into it, as we saw from Liverpool on Sunday. So you never know. One thing that I'm going to say is Mo Salah will score.
If he does, it's going to be 1-1 anyway.
Okay,
you've heard it here first. Anyway, Brighton, we've spoken about them. I said I worried for them a few months ago, and they haven't really shown enough to change my mind, to be honest. They've ground out some results earlier on in the season. I know they've got a couple of wins in recent weeks as well. But you lose at home to Southampton, knowing that Cardiff come to the Amex along with Newcastle and Bournemouth, where you need to pick up points because your away games at Wolves, Spurs and Arsenal, and then hosting City on the last day of the season, I think is... It's a worry. You know, I do genuinely worry for them, and I think out of the clubs that are around there, I actually think they are still the biggest rivals with Cardiff for that last place.
So if I said to you now, I'll give you £1,000, who would you put that money on to go down?
It would be Cardiff. Ask me after they play Burnley, and if Brighton have lost that game, then and they go into the game against Cardiff then it could... I mean, if Cardiff win two games and Brighton lose that next game against Cardiff, then they'll be.
You think it's between those two sides?
Yeah.
See, I think that if personally, I think whoever loses out of the Cardiff Burnley game, I think it would just be such a huge psychological blow at this stage of the season. And like you say, if Cardiff were the ones who win that, you could see them going to Brighton and winning.
Yeah.
And what neither of these sides or none of these sides that we've talked about, what none of them need when playing each other are draws. Because, I mean, a draw for Burnley against Cardiff wouldn't be the end of the world, but it doesn't really do Cardiff any favours. No. And Brighton at home to Cardiff won't want a draw either, because, let's be honest, that's a game that you have to win in that position. So it's going to be intriguing, and there is only one relegation spot to play for, but it's pretty much as exciting as that one Champions League spot that you would imagine is going to come down to Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester United. And it's what we want in the Premier League, given that it's tight at the top and it's tight at the bottom.
Speaking of it being tight, let's talk about the best for the rest of the middle of the table. Spoken about Palace earlier, that beat Huddersfield at the weekend, so I think Palace are safe as well.
100%.
You know, said the same about Newcastle as well. I think that's pretty much nailed on. Certainly a win would sort that out. Bournemouth lost 2-0 at King Power at Leicester, and you know, Leicester, they continue under the Rodgers regime, and I'd say it's looking bright for them. And I think it's a very intriguing summer for both the Cherries and the Foxes, with one no doubt conscious of keeping their players in Bournemouth. And Leicester, you'd say they're looking at what recruitment they can do to build on a little bit of momentum, a good end to the season.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. These sides are unlikely, you'd imagine, to break into that top six. So what they have to ensure they are doing is finishing seventh and giving themselves an opportunity at attracting players on the back of that. I think if you look at the sides that are up there, they've all got relatively decent stadiums, they've all got relatively decent managers, and they've probably got pretty decent budgets as well. And in Wolves and Leicester, next season is the big one for them, because they will try and break that top six, however difficult that might be. And we've talked about Chelsea already. They're going to have a transfer embargo. You can see that there's an opportunity there in both Wolves and Leicester to potentially knock them out of the top six.
I mean, we spoke at the start of this season, Everton, you know, they continued their upturning fortunes with a rare win away at the London Stadium, and that was West Ham, I would say, very much on the beach now for the rest of the season.
We've got to play them.
Well, I was going to mention this. Their current run of form is win one, lose one, and if that continues, you lose.
Oh, brilliant.
I mean, that probably won't continue. They will be very much on the beach at that point, but we shall see. And then Watford and Wolves, who, you know, we've spoken about Wolves and Watford previously, but picked up a win apiece from two games. But so probably more crucially for the two of them, they face each other at Wembley this weekend in the FA Cup semi-final. And, you know, whatever happens, they will both be able to take a huge amount of positives from this season. And I look forward to seeing what they can both do next year. You know, Watford have to sustain this. They have to have some consistency. Wolves, I think, are very much on an upward trajectory. So, as you say, they'll be the ones looking to break the top six. Watford have shown so much this season to be enthusiastic about, and so much more encouraging than the last few years, just having the same manager in place for a start. They've got some fantastic individuals, and I think, you know, they should also continue to go up rather than down as well.
Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting FA Cup semi-final weekend, and we'll be rounding up all of that next week. We've only got one part left this week, but it's an exciting part, isn't it, Mitch? It's a chance for you to shine initially, and then possibly shine even more after that. It's time for Fantasy Premier League and the quiz, but not until we've got through this break. She's watching wrestling, creaming over tough guys, listening to rap metal, turntables in her eyes. It's like a bad movie, she's looking through me. If you were me, then you'd be screaming, someone shoot me, as I fell miserably, trying to get the...
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Sweeper podcast. And before we get to the quiz, I think we need to update the Fantasy Premier League standings, because in March we had 15 points between the top five players in a hard-fought month, and it was thorn in Mitch's side, in my side, just bloody Frank Louis Priard, or whatever your name is, bipolar FPL disorder, who was the team of the month with 255 points. Pod favourite Chaz Cravens, Charlie's A, you know, came in joint second with my Ampadubit Society on 251 points, just four behind. But it's the overall standings we've all come for, isn't it, Michael?
No. No, it's all about Manager of the Month, Mitch. No, you're right. It's I say this through gritted teeth, but you have quite comfortably been the best in that league this season.
I am top of the pile, just shy of breaking the 2,000 point barrier for the season. And that was after a fantastic start to the month as well. I am now in the top 10,000 players of all the game. How do you feel about that?
It's great. I'm really, really, really pleased for you.
Thanks. But the aforementioned Frank-Louis Priard is keeping the pressure on. Just 27 points behind. I think it's going to be tight. What about you, though, Michael?
I'm eighth. I'm fine with that. I've told you I'd quite like to finish top six, which is looking difficult. And the only thing that's keeping me going is I've still got three of my chips left, I think, or maybe I've got triple captain, and I've got I've got triple captain and bench boost left. So I have to use those wisely.
I've used mine very well, I'd say. I mean, I had Aguero's triple captain this weekend. He got a goal and assist, and then obviously got injured, which was a shame. But I still got 125 points.
Congratulations, Mitch. Right. Let's bring you down a peg or two. Let's go to the quiz. Before we get to that quiz, just update everybody on the scores, will you?
30-19. I've had an absolute shit show over the last, for all season, let's face it.
Mitch is that far behind, he's decided that we need to change the format of the quiz to give him a chance to get more points.
And it's just giving you more.
Right, so this week Mitch is going to have five questions, and it's in the Blockbusters theme. As always, there's an opportunity, Mitch, for a whopping 9 points this
Speaking
week.
Speaking of Blockbusters, have you seen they brought it back?
I have, yeah. Dara O'Brien presenting it.
I'm tempted to ask for some money for that, because I think we've pushed that to the masses.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Let me know how you get on with that. Right, we'll start with your 50-50. Get off to a decent start. W is for wins. Simple question. Who has more wins this season in the Premier League, Chelsea or Manchester United?
Cripes.
There's one in it.
I'm going to say, based on the fact that one's higher than the other, I'll just go with Chelsea.
Chelsea is correct. Good. He's one from one. Chelsea have won 19, Manchester United have won 18. Chelsea went on that run, didn't they, early in the season under Sarri, where they're absolutely flying.
Makes sense.
Second question, C is for community. And I want to know, in what year was the Community Shield last played away from Wembley?
Ah, right, okay.
And don't go on the basis that Wembley reopened in 2007.
No, I'm not.
I don't know why it was moved, actually.
There was one that was played at Villa Park.
This is it, Mitch. This is the
but
one.
I had no idea what year.
When
it was
it?
I will say, trying to think back to the last one I remember.
Shall I tell you who was playing in it?
City win it.
City Chelsea. Lost it 3-2 against Chelsea.
Yeah. In which case, let's try and figure it out. So Chelsea, I don't know, not that that's going to help because I don't know which one won what. I will go with 2014.
You were close. 2012.
Right.
Manchester City lost to Chelsea. Right. Do you want your big blockbuster points buster question, or do you want to save that to last?
No, let's just get it out of the way.
Okay, so S is for shots.
I like shots.
And as I said, 5 points is up for grabs here. All I want you to do is tell me which five players have had the most shots in the Premier League this season. So there's 5 players, 5 points up for grabs. But how many are you going to wager that you can get? Because if you say that you can get 5 and you get 1 wrong, then you lose all your points. If you say 2 and get them both right, then happy days.
I've got to
get 2 points.
So I'll go 3.
3. Yeah. Okay. So you've got to get 3 out of the 5. Can't have any stumbles, no trip-ups. The first 3 answers that you give me have to be correct. So who's your first one?
Mo Salah.
Mo Salah is correct. He's second on the list.
That's probably only in recent weeks where he's been proper greedy.
Yes.
Okay, let's follow suit in terms of top scorers. I will go with Aguero.
Aguero is also correct. That's 2. Sergio Aguero is 4th on the list, so there's 2 more players who were above those 2 that you've said. Sorry, 1 in 3rd and 1 in 1st.
Okay, so we've then got...
Who have you got in your head?
It's between 2 players who haven't played every single game this season. That's Kane and Aubameyang.
Right.
Kane has a lot of shots, and Aubameyang scored a lot of goals. But as I say, they haven't played every game. I will go with Harry Kane.
Is correct, Mitch. Yes. 3 points.
Maybe the other 2.
The other 2. The leading shot taker has just been relegated from the Premier League.
Really?
Aleksandar Mitrovic, yeah, for Fulham. And in fifth place was Jimenez from Wolves.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, you have got two left.
Yep.
And
got 4 points.
You've got 4 points so far. Question four, I is for impact. Can you tell me which Premier League striker has had the best season in terms of league goal return in the season in which he made his Premier League debut? Basically, it's not Mo Salah, because he played in the Premier League for Chelsea previously. So, this Premier League striker, his debut season, he has been the most prolific in terms of goals scored.
Full season, I assume.
Well, he played...
It's not an average,
it's total goals in the Premier League that season. That season, he played 33 Premier League games, and he scored 24 Premier League goals, which makes him the most prolific.
I will go for...
Who hit the ground running?
I'll go with Aguero.
It's not Sergio Aguero. It's Fernando Torres in 2007-2008. 24 goals in 33 Premier League games.
Only thinking current strikers. Right.
And your last question, L is for landmark. I'd like you to tell me who the first black player was who played for England.
Viv Anderson.
Knowledge, Mitch. That's 5 points from a possible nine. He's back in the game. It's 30-24.
It is indeed.
With only a few weeks left. And that's it for this week. Mitch is... I'm back in the hot seat next week, so you need to prepare some difficult questions. Do you want to let everyone know how they can get in contact with us?
Yeah, guys, tell me how good I am for a change on Twitter at The Sweeper Pod, Instagram and Facebook, search The Sweeper Podcast, and you can email us at thesweeperpodcast@gmail.com. And whilst we're at it, get us on iTunes, review, rate, subscribe, send it to everyone. And we appreciate we've been quite quiet on social media recently, so I think whilst it gets to the business end of the season, I think we need to up our game as well.
Indeed. And we're thinking about changing the format of the podcast next season a little bit, so we will tell you more about that in the coming weeks, but we need your interaction essentially to kind of look at the way in which we can meet your needs as podcast listeners. So thank you as always for listening this week. It's been a belter. We look forward to talking to you next week following a weekend of FA Cup and Premier League and Championship goals galore, no doubt, and there'll also be an update from Portugal, so we'll speak to you then.
Go!
One actually, which would you rather fight, one horse sized duck or 100 duck sized horses? I'd rather fight a big duck.